Overhead Door Company, the original garage door company, serving you for over 90 years. Call 843-767-0028 or overheaddoorco.com. Overhead Door Company of Charleston, proud to open hour two of the Morrow Midday Show.
This is the Morrow Midday Show.
But wait, there's more.
On ESPN Radio.
Back again. Sadie's back. Tell a friend. Guess who's back? 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 Guess who's back?
Second hour of the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up a little bit later on, we'll try to link up with Elliot Johnson this afternoon. Plus, one tradition in baseball, and it's amongst the fans of baseball, needs to come to an end. Amongst the fans, so I'm not talking about the Braves bullpen blowing games. That tradition can end as well. That's not the one I'm referring to. We'll get to the Braves. We'll get to something from the baseball world coming up as well. And which division? Or which team is the best quarterback of each division in the NFL this year? Get to that coming up. We've been talking plenty about college football this afternoon because college football is right around the corner. And we're pleased to announce our kickoff to college football golf tournament coming up August 19th, a month from today. The links at Stono Ferry. College football is around the corner. And so ESPN Radio Charleston wants to kick off the season with a good old-fashioned golf tournament. You can come out and represent your college team at your foursome at Stono Ferry. And how about this? The winning foursome will score tickets to the homecoming game of their favorite college team, courtesy of ESPN Radio Charleston, 98.9. A portion of the proceeds donated to donated to Fantalk Families to benefit the Ronald McDonald House. Registration opens. We'll see now. It says Monday, but it also says July 20th. Today is Monday, but July 19th. So I think they mean today. I just read. I'm like Ron Burgundy. I read whatever is written.
Good to know.
Yeah. Yeah, don't get any ideas. Don't be writing anything into my scripts here, my reads that I have to do each day that I shouldn't be saying. If it's on the page, I'm reading it. So I think registration begins today. Head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to go register. And there's all sorts of crazy stuff going on. Yeah, I mean, great stuff going on, right? Like it's an 8:30 registration that day, 10 a.m. shotgun start. charlestonsportsradio.com to register your foursome. $300 per foursome. And your foursome must be dressed in your college team colors or gear. But a lot of great things going on. Breakfast will be provided. Lunch will be provided. The winning foursome wins college gear, a framed picture of their college stadium, and tickets to their college team's homecoming game no matter where. Doesn't matter what team you're a fan of. This is for all teams, right? This isn't a Clemson thing. This isn't a Clemson versus South Carolina like we do at Thanksgiving. This isn't a Citadel, Furman, whatever. Any team you root for, this is for you. The kickoff to college football golf tournament. It's only open to 36 foursomes. So, you know these are going to go quick if our 2021 summer golf tour was any indication. So get yours now. The links at Stono Ferry. The golf tournament is a month from today, August 19th. It's the kickoff to college football. And if you have the winning foursome, you'll get all sorts of prizes for your favorite college football team, including tickets to the homecoming game. All right? So head on over to charlestonsportsradio.com to go register today. Free breakfast, free lunch, a golf tournament, a chance to win some great prizes for the upcoming college football season. You can't beat it. $300 per foursome over at the links at Stono Ferry. charlestonsportsradio.com. Because college football is right around the corner. And I was talking earlier about teams with the opportunity we could have some craziness to start the college football season. Clemson and Georgia, week one, huge game. Alabama has to deal with Miami and then Florida, both away from home, two of the first three games this year. Ohio State gets Minnesota week one, the most experienced team, Minnesota, who I think has a bounce back this year. Ohio State will have a new quarterback. They have to deal with Minnesota right out of the gate. Even Notre Dame, who was in the playoff last year, they have to deal with Florida State. Sounds like an easy game, but you're going to Florida State. They have a new quarterback, Mackenzie Milton, transferred in, and outside of that, they return their other 10 starters on offense. Year two of Mike Norvell. I don't think Florida State will be great this year, but they have a chance to surprise a few teams along the way. Iowa State has to deal with Iowa week two, big rivalry game. Iowa State has lost all five games against Iowa under Matt Campbell. Georgia has to face Clemson. Those are some of the top teams in college football this year based off of odds. And then even for the Pac-12, if the Pac-12 wants to make a name for themselves, they can in the second week of the season. Washington takes on Michigan, and Washington could have one of the best defenses in the country. And Oregon takes on Ohio State. So not only does Ohio State have to deal with Minnesota, then you get Oregon the next week. So that Minnesota game, maybe that could even be a little bit of a look ahead. I don't think so. But I know some have made the case. The Oregon game's even bigger. Ohio State may be looking past Minnesota week one. Then you get Oregon week two. So Ohio State jumps into the fire right away. So too does Clemson, Georgia, Alabama. A chance for some surprises. Now all these teams, they're the best teams in the country because they win these games. And they probably will win them this year as well. But as I continue to roll this big snowball at this point, keep pushing it down the hill, as we get ready for the college football season, just to make you aware, there's a chance, there's ever a chance, for some parity in college football. It could be this year. A lot of changes with the top teams in college football and a lot of big games early in the year. And when would you want to face Clemson? Week one with a new quarterback or week 10, right? When would you want to face Ohio State? Week one, first time their quarterback's ever playing, or by the time they've gotten 3 months under their belts of playing games? You want to get them early. And there's a chance for some teams out there to get some of the best teams early. Florida gets Alabama coming to their place week three. Right, Georgia, Clemson, neutral site. Obviously, one has to lose. Minnesota gets Ohio State right away. Then Oregon gets them. Michigan and Washington, second week of the year. Iowa State and Iowa, week two. Iowa State has never been able to get past Iowa under Matt Campbell. Could be some shakeup, maybe even some mayhem in September in college football. And as somebody who's been rooting for parity for a while, I'm also rooting for some mayhem to start the year. I'm glad we're getting some exciting games, and I also hope we get a few surprises along the way. Maybe, just maybe, it will happen. 843-721-9500 to join the conversation. Coming up, I will rank the quarterbacks in each division in the NFL because one player had some fighting words for a rivaling quarterback. And I'll get to all that in just a moment. But first, let's go to the phones because Jim is with us. Jim, what's going on? How are you?
I'm okay, Luke. How are you?
Doing well. What's up?
All right. We got a little bit of laundry that's been created on Friday on Bobby's show. A tag team wrestling match was created.
Ooh.
But Bobby, for his tag team member, would be Blake Bucket Boy, but Bobby doesn't want him. So it's me. It's Super Dave, and my name is Jimmy the Bruiser, taking on Bobby Harton in a tag team match, but we're going to be out there at the same time. Because, of course, Dave is blind, so I have to guide him. Okay, and this is supposed to be in the near future. It's going to be in a parking lot at your radio station. I have to raise $50,000, which I already have $6,000 committed as of this morning, and your boss man there, Gil Kirkman, committed $5,000. I'm asking for you to be my agent there, you know, handle things over there, be my agent, Luke. And I need Joe to be our man in the corner to give us the encouragement to take on Bobby Harton. Now, the only thing I ask is you got to tell Bobby Harton he's got to be tested for monkeypox. That's the new thing that's going on over there in Houston, Texas, and people with white hair are attracted to monkeypox. So you make sure that Bobby Harton is tested for monkeypox before we can put this together. And I'm serious about it. I've already, all weekend, haven't eaten any meat. I had a salad today. I did have a little chicken salad on my salad. But I'm in the works of getting on the bike because Bobby said, Jim Downer can't even get in the ring. When you say that to me, he's in for trouble. And he also did make the statement that he will throw Dave out of the ring.
Oh.
I don't know what you've heard around the radio station about it, but there's already a promo on it. Blake made a promo on it already.
Awesome. I love this. We have to make this happen. I'll try to do whatever I can to get you guys in the ring because I would love to see this.
First thing, you get Bobby tested for monkeypox, okay?
All right.
Tell him. Look it up. It's a true thing that happened in Houston, Texas. I don't want him coming in the ring and sweating and whatever. And I want you also to check if his office is handicap accessible after he has to be in a wheelchair after we get done with him, okay?
All right.
Just watch. That's what's going to happen. I would appreciate Joe being our man in the corner, and Super Dave and Jimmy the Bruiser will beat Bobby the Lamecock. Okay?
I love it. I love it. We have to make this happen. Whatever I can do to help, we have to raise these funds. We have to go get the intern to go start a GoFundMe page. I would love to see Super Dave. He's already got the wrestling name.
Oh, we have the promo.
Yeah?
You have seen WWE. You have seen WWF. Now it's time to witness the newest corporation in the wrestling family. WTF. That's right, WTF. In one corner you have the big kahuna, Bobby Harton. Age, unknown. Weight, who cares? Can bench press whatever a handle a crown weighs. And he is taking on the Bob C. Twins of Chucktown. One blind, one with a bum leg. A fight for the record books. Wait, what's that? Another contender? Nope, just Dave trying to find the stage. Dave's over here. Sponsored by Men's Depends. Why rush to the bathroom every time? Be a man. Piss your pants. As well as Metamucil to keep that natural flow. And SeniorSingles.com, where as long as you can get there before an ambulance, you have a date. With special appearances by Betty White and Bob Barker, WTF 2021. Tickets on sale soon.
That's amazing. Like, I tell you what, there used to be a thing. I don't know if it's still a thing. People used to pay money to buy the videos for bum fights. That's what they used to call it, right? You'd watch just homeless people fight, like, in a gas station, and you'd buy VHS. You could, as Blake said at the end, tickets go on sale soon. I think you could sell a bunch of tickets. I think it could be as big as a McGregor fight to get Super Dave and Jim in the ring against Bobby. I think you could sell a lot of tickets for that. Now, it sounds like a triangle match, right? Bobby's not going to have a partner. Apparently, he doesn't want Blake in his corner. So it's going to be a triangle match.
Or they call it a handicap match.
Oh, is that a handicap match? All right. Well, okay. So a handicap match, which I guess is fair with our contestants. And so we got a handicap match brewing here. Now, whatever it takes to get this done. I did hear this in passing. I wasn't listening Friday, but as I was making my way through the radio station, through the hallway, I could hear something about this type of wrestling match. And I totally forgot about it over the weekend. So I'm glad Jim brought it up. And then we got to play that promo because that's fantastic. We have to make this happen.
Although I think Trey Parker and Matt Stone are going to have something to say about it because there was an episode of South Park where the kids started their own little wrestling company called WTF.
Ah, well, we'll get them involved too. Who would you take? Who would be the betting favorite? You got Bobby against Jim and Super Dave in a handicap match. You think Bobby could handle that duo?
Well, let's see. What's Jim's athletic background? Now, Dave said he's a veteran, a military veteran, so he's had some physical training.
Yes.
Don't know about Jim's. Bobby was a former college cheerleader.
Uh-huh.
So he might have some advantage there as far as being able to do the flips and maybe the maybe the cartwheels and things like that to avoid contact.
Yeah. Could you imagine Bobby doing like a moonsault off the top rope? That would be something.
But as long as he would take, Dave would still have plenty of time to move out of the way. You know, play possum and move.
Yeah. If he could sense it. You know, Dave would have to be like Daredevil in the ring. He'd have to be able to sense Bobby's movements to be able to handle him. I would love to see this happen. That would be the event of the year. You would sell more tickets to that than probably any other fight of the year. That's how great it would be. Now we just have to raise the money to make this happen. Let's set up a GoFundMe. And we'll put the life savings right into it to get this match happening. And, of course, we'll have to test Bobby for everything. All three contestants. Test them for everything before we get him in the ring.
Now, if I'm going to be the manager in the corner,
yeah,
what do I get to carry to the ring?
Yeah,
like,
what would
Paul
shtick?
Jones used to have a cane. Okay, Jim Cornette had his tennis racket.
Right.
What do I get to carry?
Yeah, that's a good question. What would be your shtick? I don't know. You ever think about it? Like, hey, if I was ever a manager, this is what I would do.
Maybe I can call up... one of the former members of the Beautiful People from TNA, which is now Impact, because they had the pink baton called the Ugly Stick.
Ah. You could come out with a megaphone. You could be like Jimmy Hart. And Jimmy Hart, he's not too far from here. We'll get him over here.
Yeah, see if we can borrow his megaphone.
Yeah, this could turn into quite the event. I would love to see that happen. We just need to raise the money now. Coming up, yeah, you raise that money, you donate some of it to the Ronald McDonald House, now you're talking. It'd be a great event. Love to see this wrestling match. Get Bobby in the ring. Love it. Coming up, we'll get back to the NFL quarterbacks a little bit later on. But when we come back, we have to stop a tradition in baseball, and it involves the fans. And we'll get to that when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
This is the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Coming up, a tradition that needs to come to an end in baseball. Get to that coming up. And speaking of which, we'll link up, at least try to, with a former big leaguer, Elliot Johnson, in just over 10 minutes from now. We struck out twice last week. He had some conflicts. He said, Monday, 1:30, let's do it. We'll try to have him on. Joe, you think Elliot Johnson comes through today?
I don't know. What are the odds right now? What's Vegas calling on this?
Yeah, that's a good question. I said earlier, in his career, he was a 122 hitter with two strikes on him. He's got two strikes right now. He's got to come up with a big hit. We'll see. I hope so. I'm looking forward to talking with him in about 10, 12 minutes. Elliot Johnson, former Atlanta Brave. You can always join the conversation, 843-721-9500. We got a lot to get to, but when I hear about this wrestling match last segment, you know, I could spend the rest of the afternoon talking about it.
And speaking of entrance themes.
Yes, that's right. We need to get this man in the wrestling ring. He's already got the song to go with it. When you hear that song, you know what it means. It used to be like Stone Cold's music. You used to hear that music. Oh, you knew Stone Cold was coming to the ring. Something was going to happen. And something's about to happen because Jerome's with us. Jerome, what's going on? How are you?
Hey, every time I hear that song, it makes me want to shake my booty.
Well, you could come out to that wrestling match, and you could do that in the ring for us.
Hey, and if I'm shaking my booty, I can tell you something right now. It's not a pretty sight.
I can imagine.
It's not a pretty sight. They won't be putting me on Soul Train anytime soon.
Yeah.
Okay? But the only thing I want to see Harden and his alleged wrestling partner, only thing I want to see them involved in is an oatmeal eating contest, okay? So who can eat the most oatmeal?
Oatmeal? Why oatmeal?
Yeah. Because they're both old, cranky old men, and that's all they should be doing, wrestling each other.
I got you.
Harden's almost 7 years old, man. He needs to keep still. Come on, don't be ridiculous. And Downer, he's probably the same age as Harden is. Okay? So, man, look, just forget it. It's just a bunch of nonsense. Hey, by the way, Harden wanted to fight me one time several years ago.
There we go.
I made him so mad. I made him so mad by what I said about him. He said he was going to beat me up. I said, come on, beat me up if you can find me. And beat me up, man. Come on, beat away.
We could put that on the undercard. We'll put that on the undercard. That'll be the lead up to the main event. We'll get you in the wrestling ring.
Come on, man. I'm not a young man anymore, man. My wild and crazy days have gone by a long time ago. I'm just a genteel old guy right now, trying to make it through life, trying to keep his health, man. I just saw my doctor last week, and she says, I'll see you in 6 months. So, hey, I told him I try to do everything y'all tell me to do. She said, that's good. I'll see you in 6 months. Okay.
That's good.
That's all I'm trying to do, man. What Valvano said, survive in advance. That's what life is, man. You survive long enough. And maybe you can just keep advancing on. So that's all I'm trying to do. But I wanted to ask you.
Yeah.
Is someone going to get kicked out tomorrow night's game? Because that's going to be down and dirty. Yeah. You think Booker pushes off a lot. Now, you went to see tomorrow night, and he fouled. He picked up his fifth foul in the last game, and they didn't call it again. He wrapped the guy up. He had his arm around him. And the ball went out of bounds, and they gave it to Milwaukee. That was a foul, too. But they're going to pull out all the dirty tricks tomorrow because, Milwaukee, I'm telling you, you do not want to go back and tempt fate with a Game 7 in Phoenix, okay? They were talking about how loud that building is the other night. Wait till they get a Game 7 on their home court. I would not want to face them again. So you better take care of look, all the they're going to argue with the officials. They're not going to call traveling. They're not going to call foul. They're not going to call anything. So you just got to play through the whistles. You got to play through the zebras swallowing them whistles. You got to do all of that because they're going to be a tough out. They're going to bring the physicality tomorrow night. I can promise you that. And Giannis, get ready for some physical play down low because every time you get in the paint, especially late in the game, they're going to hack you. They're going to foul you because if it's a close game, they're going to put you on the foul line. They're going to pull out all the tricks tomorrow night to stay alive because they're wounded now. And, hey, look, this is their season. So we're going to see what's going to happen. But I can trust this will probably be the most physical game of the series. Okay?
Do the Bucks close it out tomorrow night?
I hope they do, but, hey, Phoenix is wounded. They are seething with anger, okay? They're going to pull out all the tricks tomorrow night. Don't argue with the officials because that's not going to do you any good. Because when you argue with them, they just look right through you. Even though they know they're wrong, they look right through you. They don't even acknowledge you. So, look, don't waste your time arguing with the officials. Just stick to play the game because that's what it's going to come down. You have to play through everything. I saw Crowder take four steps the other night to lay the ball in the basket. I said, he was in front, right where the fish could see him. They called nothing. So, hey, all bets are off. Just stick to playing. Don't worry about all the other stuff. And one more thing,
yeah.
It's not where you play, it's how you play. I'll always believe that.
Yes, I agree with you. Appreciate it. Send it in, Jerome. I agree with you. Except that how these guys play is based on where they play. You know, like statistically, they've crunched the numbers that everybody plays worse on the road, even the great players. The problem is the great players, when they drop off a little bit, they're still really good, right? If LeBron has an off night, he's still really good. But when a role player has an off night, they're just a regular guy. Before, they were a two or three at their best. Now they're a little bit off, right? They're a four or five. They're a bench player at that point. So it is about how you play, but how you play is dependent on where you're playing. And I do think the Bucks close out tomorrow night. We open the show, talk about the NBA Finals. We'll circle back to it coming up later on this afternoon as well. I do think the Bucks close it out tomorrow night. I just don't think they lose at home. But what Jerome was saying about the physicality, look, the officials are letting them play, and I appreciate it. But Saturday night, we saw Chris Paul, Devin Booker each had five fouls. P.J. Tucker had five fouls. Jrue Holiday ended up with only four fouls, but he picked up two early on. You know, Jrue Holiday had probably the best game of the bunch for what he did on both ends of the floor, came up with a big steal, and it almost didn't happen because he got an early foul trouble. Then he was able to play a little cleaner the rest of the way. But if you look at this, the Bucks can be more physical because they have a game to spare. All right, like you don't want one of your stars or one of your starters to foul out, but for the Bucks, and you never want to give away a game, but you have two opportunities to win one game. So if you're a little physical, right, and say Jrue Holiday does foul out or P.J. Tucker fouls out or whatever it is, right, it's like, well, we do have a game seven. Not that you're playing with house money, not that you want to get careless, but Phoenix, I mean, it's an elimination game for the Suns tomorrow night, so they almost have to be perfect. Like, you can't take chances because your season is on the line, whereas Milwaukee, they can be a little more aggressive because you want to win. You don't want to go back to Phoenix for Game 7. It's going to be crazy there. But, you know, you have two opportunities to close it out. It's not a must win for Milwaukee tomorrow night. So you could be a little more aggressive. But on the flip side, for Phoenix, you know, what do they say? The most dangerous animal is the wounded and cornered animal. And the Suns right now, they're wounded. They're cornered. They're hurt. They're beat up. Their season's on the line tomorrow. They got to go on the road to Milwaukee. So they may let it all hang out tomorrow night against Milwaukee. Especially somebody like a Jay Crowder. And allow me to name drop once again. We have to come up with some sort of production piece. And Joe can play it whenever I drop names here on the show. But I met Jay Crowder's father once a few years back. And he was a great guy. And so I always liked Jay Crowder. I always liked him as he's a solid role player, good veteran presence, playing in the NBA Finals back-to-back years. I met his father once. He was a nice guy. And I like Jay Crowder. And then, but this series, let me tell you, Jay, with the flopping he's doing and all the, oh, my gosh, stay on your feet. You want to talk about wrestling, he could be a good wrestler. With all the flapping he's doing, trying to draw calls, he's been a little pesky. The Suns are a pesky team, led by Chris Paul, right? That's his style. Devin Booker with all the fouls lately, Jay Crowder is a little bit of a bruiser out there. So for Milwaukee, you can be a little extra aggressive because you have an extra game to play with here if you want to take that chance. But for Phoenix, I'm sure they'll be more aggressive tomorrow night or more physical because they're wounded and cornered. And the most dangerous animal is the one that is wounded and or cornered. They're going to come out swinging, not literally, figuratively, tomorrow night. And we'll see what it brings. But I think Milwaukee closed out at home. I just can't see. They're one of the best home teams in the league over the last couple of years. I just don't see them slipping up and missing out on this opportunity to finish it out at home tomorrow night. We'll link up with Elliot Johnson when we come back, talk some baseball with the former Atlanta Brave. It's the Morrow Midday Show right here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Yes, I do. It's the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow here on ESPN Radio. Coming up, one tradition needs to end in the baseball world, and it's not the Braves bullpen coughing up games. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But we're pleased to be linking up with former big leaguer Elliot Johnson, who's joining us now. He'll be part of the Legends in the South softball game Friday night at Joe Riley Park. Gates open at 5 o'clock. For a fan fest and autograph session, game starts at 7:30, fireworks after the game, and a portion of the proceeds will benefit MUSC's Children's Hospital. Former players of the Rays, Braves, and Yankees will be taking the field Friday night here in the Lowcountry to take each other on. And as mentioned, Elliot Johnson will be part of the game. He's with us now, former five-year big leaguer. Elliot, good afternoon. How are you?
Thanks for having me, Luke. Doing well. How are you?
Doing well. Appreciate the time. Now, you spent 2 years in Charleston back in 03, 04 playing here in town. Let's go back to that era. What was it like? Did you enjoy your time playing here in Charleston?
Of course, yeah. Charleston's a beautiful town. We loved it. The only thing that's really disappointing, Luke, that doesn't get talked about enough is the wind blows in every single day. So as a position player, you're going to hear the sentiment being, it was nice to go on the road to play, and as a pitcher, you're going to hear them say they love pitching at Riley Park.
Yeah, that's fitting, because somebody brought this to my attention last week. I never even knew of this, of the night when you hit three homers in Greensboro right back in 2004. You homered three times in each of the first three innings, and you entered that stretch, I believe, with only two career home runs up to that point.
Yeah.
Take us back.
I hit one the night before the final inning before, Luke. So I hit four home runs in four consecutive innings and four consecutive at-bats. It's wiffle ball stuff.
Yes, and at the time, and I don't know if anybody has matched that, but I know at the time that was a record, four straight innings for you to do that. So what was that like? I mean, I can only imagine. As a professional hitter, you go up there, you homer four straight at-bats. You must be feeling like Babe Ruth or the Natural whenever you're rounding those bases.
Yeah, you know what? And I had, crazy thing is, I had a shot to do, I came up again in the fourth and flew out to center field. So I had a shot at going 5 for 5. So it was really, really fun. Unfortunately, I think I ended the year with 6. And so, you know, a lot of that is because you play in Riley Park, but the other part, you know, that really wasn't my game at that point. I think I still weighed like 180 pounds maybe, you know, if that. And so home runs weren't necessarily my thing. My thing was to get on base and steal bases. I think I stole 40 plus that year. And just making sure I was on base for Delman Young to drive me in, because, mm-hmm. I mean, that guy could really hit that year.
Yeah, I can imagine. The River Dogs, the night you hit those three, they set the record for the league with 8 home runs. When you came up in that fourth inning, by that point, was like the pressure mounting? Were you feeling like you had to hit another?
No, I mean, so what's funny, Nate Dion was on the team, and I remember coming in and telling him after the second one, I was like, you think that's some kind of record? And then after I hit the third one, I was like, that's definitely got to be a record. But no, there was no pressure. I mean, we were winning like 10-0 at the time, so there was no pressure at all. You know, you just get a good pitch. Hopefully you hit it where nobody's standing.
I know it was, it was with Charleston. It was here in the minors, but it was still a record for professional baseball, at least at the time. Did you keep anything from that night? Did anybody ask for anything like your cleats, your batting gloves, anything like that? Do you have any keepsakes from that performance?
Oh, yeah, I'm looking at the bat right now. Heck, yeah. I mean, that's definitely not something that you take lightly because you never know if it's ever going to happen again, much less, you know, for you personally, but also for the game. So I kept the bat. I've got it here in my office now. And, you know, I'll always remember that time where, you know, it almost seems like, you know, it probably should get highlighted a little bit more than it does. But obviously grateful for my time there in Charleston, whatever we were able to accomplish, because we had some really good players on those teams.
Talking with Elliot Johnson, who spent 5 years in the big league, spent 2 years playing here in Charleston during his minor league career. Yeah, you mentioned your office, so I know now you're working in finance. Take us through that when you go from a professional athlete, and a lot of times these professional athletes get themselves in trouble financially because they get money that maybe they never had before, didn't know what to do, or they don't have anybody in their life to try to be a good role model. So what about your path to go from that professional athlete to now trying to help people make sound financial decisions?
Sure. You know, we're grateful to help the great families that we are able to, you know, build a relationship with, a trust that takes some time. But, you know, you see these horror stories, obviously, and, you know, it's our job to make sure we educate them and treat them right and make sure that they're taken care of and don't ever have to worry about this stuff. So, you know, it's something that I was always passionate about and started planning on doing over a decade ago, and was lucky to play for 5 different teams and build up really great, you know, networks of guys that knew who I was, knew what I was about. And, you know, obviously, you know, our family had some pretty bright folks in it. I've got, you know, 4 brothers and a sister, and you know, all 4 of my brothers played in college or got drafted. And I'm the only one that made it to the big leagues. One of them's an Ivy Leaguer, and one of them's a math professor. So, you know, we always enjoyed that, and Thanksgiving is always a good time. So I just kind of try to educate the guys as best I can and take it from there.
Yeah, I want to ask about your family in just a moment, but do you, as a former professional athlete, do you kind of lean that? Do you try to help specifically former athletes a little bit more because of, you know, because not only do you know some of those guys, I'm sure, but also the bad road some athletes have gone down. Do you almost, for lack of a better term, like specialize with the former athlete, or you just if they reach out to you, you're willing to help?
No, it's a large focus for my team and I. So yeah, I work with the Global Sports and Entertainment Division, and so that's my specific niche. It's what I do. It's who I am. It's what I've always done. And, you know, I did it for 14 years professionally and have been doing it ever since I got out. So, obviously, it was a goal to focus on after 2010 and, you know, luckily played another few years in the big leagues. But, yeah, that's definitely something that we are specific to and very, very good at what we do at.
What was it like not only being a professional athlete but also getting your degree along the way while playing in the bigs?
You know, school's never been a challenge for me. It is time-consuming because you're a full-time ball player. You know, you're a full-time dad and a full-time student. So, but what we, you know, basically the time that you spend on, you know, you can't really do a whole lot of other things. So if you're on the road and guys are going to go do whatever it is, you're like, nah, I can't go. I got to go write a paper or whatever it is, or, you know, put together a PowerPoint. So, you know, tried to, you know, do everything I could to make sure I was ready to go when you get out, because you never know how long the game is going to last. You want to play as long as you possibly can, but the playing days always end for everyone. I don't care who you are.
So what was it like growing up in that family? You mentioned the great baseball ability for not only you but your brothers as well. I mean, how competitive was it growing up? What was the upbringing like with your father grooming all you guys to be these great athletes? What was it like growing up in the Johnson household?
I mean, everything was a competition. So I'm in the middle of the boys. I'm the 3rd of the 5 boys, so my younger brother, he's a Harvard guy. He's the guy that kind of challenged me to do everything because, you know, he was right nipping on my heels all the time, right? And so I had to work hard because I didn't want him, you know, running his mouth. And then my 2 older brothers were obviously really special, so I always had them to look up to, and 2 younger brothers to make sure that I didn't give them any talking points at dinner after a game or whatever it was. You know, I wanted to make sure I had to keep them from one-upping me. So it was kind of a great culture to grow up in. My dad always believed that we were all going to play in the big leagues because, you know, he was a big Cubs fan, and he was so sick of them losing, he took it upon himself to try and get us to play for the Cubs and get them back to the World Series. So I always joked with my dad that I have 1 more hit in the playoffs than Ernie Banks does, which is his favorite player.
Yeah, and you were part of the 2013 Braves team that made the playoffs, and you came over midseason and played a big role on that team. Even though you only spent half a year, what were your experiences like being a member of the Atlanta Braves?
we had such a good team. It was awesome to be a part of that. We were, basically a pitch away from Game 5, bringing L.A. back to Atlanta, and you never know what could happen after that, right? So, I mean, we had a really good team, won the division, early in August, it felt like. You really don't really see that a whole lot, not in today's game. It was there's so much parity anymore. It's really strange to see the NL East winner that early in the season. But being able to celebrate there and clinch in Chicago was a lot of fun. I felt like I had a great year for those guys, and getting to do that little NASCAR bit was probably my favorite part of being part of the Braves that year.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you because, you're well known as a very funny guy. My first question would be, that sense of humor that you seem to have, how important is that for a baseball player, where we know the classic line, right, the greatest fail 7 out of 10 times? It can be such a humbling sport. So how important can it be to have kind of that loose attitude, be able to have a sense of humor, have some fun over the course of a long season?
Well, so you get 20, 30 games in spring training, 162 during the year, another 20 in the playoffs if you're lucky, right? So, I mean, inevitably there's plenty of periods of monotony, periods of failure are inevitably going to come. You have to be able to put that aside and move on to the next pitch as quick as you can. So, you control what you can control, and you compartmentalize failure as much as you possibly can, because nobody cares. All they care about is you being in the moment to be able to either defend or hit the next pitch. So, you find a way to handle failure in your own way, and everyone has their own style. But, typically speaking, I tried to keep the guys as relaxed and loose as possible, because everybody knows in between the lines there's so much on the line all the time, pressure, financial, everything is always there. So, when you're outside the lines, you can try to just relax a whole lot more, because everybody knows what's on the line when the game starts.
So as you referenced that interview where you gave a NASCAR, like as if you were a NASCAR driver in the post game, giving an interview after the Braves won, beating the Indians 2-0 back in your season with the Braves in 2013. What was the genesis of that? Was that something that you thought of previously? Was it an inside joke, or was that just spur of the moment? You thought you'd have some fun with the post game interview?
So my son at the time was really, really big into NASCAR. He started on Cars, the movie, and we watched it every day for like 3 years, I think. So then he somehow transitioned into NASCAR, and I was never really into it, but he started getting into it. So we started watching it, and like, he had every little car you can imagine. He'd memorize their number, who they were, all those things. It's kind of like what I did with baseball players. So when I went to the Braves, I knew the race was there that weekend because we followed it because of him. And so, I knew I had the hit of the game. I think we won 2-0 or something like that, and I drove in both the runs. So I knew I was going to get interviewed. And so, like, in the 9th inning, I think I started looking around, and I saw Napa Auto Parts, Chick-fil-A, Coke as, like, sponsors there. And I was like, I think I'm just going to do a little NASCAR bit and throw those guys out there. And sure enough, I did. And Napa got a hold of me the next day and sent my wife and I and Blake and Scott Strickland, one of my best friends from North Carolina here, we got to go around the pace car and meet Brian Vickers and Elliot Sadler. And so my son was just, you would have seen, it was probably the greatest day of his life to that point, because he was in the pit crew moving tires and everything. So it was a really cool moment for the family and I.
Yeah, that's awesome. So still to this day, is he more into racing than baseball?
He's transitioned again out. He's into swimming and diving now.
Okay.
And that's his thing now.
Gotcha. Talking about Elliot Johnson, who spent 5 years in the big leagues. I don't want to put you on the spot, but also not only with the NASCAR bit, with the sense of humor, I know you're good with some impressions as well. And I've seen your impressions with Harry Carey and Tim Kirkchin as well. And I've seen you do them in interviews before. Do you still bust out those impressions at all?
Yeah, I mean, so Harry, growing up doing Harry Carey, so one of the fun things, I won't throw him under the bus too much, but, Steve Stone, I've gotten to ask him a ton of questions about Harry, and his inability to pronunciate Grudzelonic, towards the end of games, and then being able to do some Kirkchin. Like, I just used to do Kirkchin just for fun during lunch, during spring training for the boys, just because. And, I did a pretty good job of getting his voice down, but, everybody started doing their own version of a Kirkchin after that, and it really got kind of overdone. But, some of the guys are really good at what he says, and some guys are better at doing the voice. I mean, it's just a nasally voice, so, I mean, it's pretty easy for me to do. And then he's actually a really good golfer, though, and he sent me his book, which I have here as well, that he's obsessed with sack flies. So Kirkchin's one of the best.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, did he ever say anything about the impression you did of him? Did he appreciate it?
No, he loves it. Yeah, I mean, he may pretend that he doesn't like it, but he loves that stuff. He's awesome. He's a wonderful guy. If you get an opportunity to talk to him or golf with him, please do, because he's got some of the best stories. He's got an amazing active mind. He doesn't forget anything. He remembers everything. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah, I've heard nothing but great things. I've never had the chance to meet him, but I've heard great stories about Tim Kirkjian. As we talk with Elliot Johnson, who spent 5 years in the big leagues, he'll be here Friday for the softball game for the Legends of the South, 5th annual. So, obviously, former big league athlete, you know, that's a skill you never lose, but now that you're working in the finance world, what's the swing been like? You've been going to the batting cages? You've been keeping up with your big league swing as we get ready for this game Friday?
Absolutely not. You know, I mean, I've got nothing left to prove. I think I'm probably going to hit right-handed because of the way the wind blows, and I think it's a shorter porch there to left field. I'll try and work that angle as much as I possibly can. But I don't have a whole lot left in the tank here, Luke.
What was that like as a switch hitter? We were just talking about that on the show last week. I mean, you have to divide your time where somebody can spend, say, all 20 minutes batting righty. I imagine you do 10 and 10 right and left. So what was it like being a switch hitter? Did you ever consider concentrating on just one side?
Yeah, of course. Yeah, of course. So it always comes across your mind as you're going through the struggles. But I was a completely different hitter on both sides of the plate. I swung a different bat model from both sides of the plate, different length, different weight, everything. I had a different skill set, right-handed versus left. I think most guys you talk to would say they're kind of similar in that regard. Most of your bats come left-handed, so that's the focus. It's, you know, anywhere from 80-90% of your ABs will come left-handed. So my focus was always trying to playing the numbers to make sure my left side was always straight. But if I was facing a lefty on any given day, you know, that day of preparation was always a little bit more heavy right-handed before the game and batting practice and whatnot.
We'll let you get out of here on this last one. Who was the toughest pitcher you ever had to face during your career?
Probably Mariano Rivera, because you know what he's throwing and you still can't hit it. He got me 2-0 my rookie year, and I thought I was getting on SportsCenter, and it went foul ball, strike three looking on the back door cutter, because, you know, you just revert back to your training, and when do you ever work on a 95-mile-an-hour cutter that starts in the other batter's box and clips the back corner of the plate? Never is the answer. So I'd say facing him was pretty tough. King Felix was really good back when his heyday. Chris Sale was still, you know, and once he comes back from this injury, he'll get back to punching out 18, 19 a game like he always does. Those are the guys that were really, really tough that even though you know what they're going to throw you and it's still hard to hit, those guys are really tough.
Just a quick follow-up. Did you ever bat righty against Mo? Because I know some guys will try that. They think that's actually easier, right, than facing him on the other side of the plate.
Yeah, I mean, it was something that was brought up. Like, you know, Joe Maddon, of course, is always one of those guys that does things differently. So I did hit right-handed against Sean Markham, and that didn't particularly work out because you're trying to nullify that changeup. But, you know, no, I did left-handed because I always had more confidence on the left side no matter what. So I was trying to, as much as I possibly could, unless Joe wanted me to try something different, I was definitely going to do it left-handed.
He's Elliot Johnson, spent 5 years in the big league, spent 2 years as a member of the River Dogs here during his minor league career, and he'll be back in town Friday for the 5th annual Legends in the South softball game at Joe Riley Park this Friday. Get your tickets online at riverdogs.com. Elliot, appreciate all the time. So much more we'd love to chat with you about, but appreciate you. Glad we could get you on the show and have fun playing here in town Friday night.
Thanks for having me.
Hey, we'll pleasure's all ours. Appreciate it. Elliot Johnson, who played in the big leagues. I didn't want to ask him, right, because I always hate – like, if you ever do a funny voice, you can impersonate somebody well, and people always ask you, like, oh, do that joke, or do that voice, or do your Harry Carey impression. So I didn't want to come out and say, hey, Elliot, could you give us a Harry Carey impression? So I tried to kind of just float it out there, see if he would take the bait, and he didn't give us the voice. You could go find the videos online, though. He does a really good Harry Carey and Tim Kirkjian, and I don't know what other impressions he has. But Elliot Johnson was always considered, you know, the funny guy in the locker room. He was a great teammate, funny guy, did good interviews, and would help. He was a good locker room guy, good clubhouse guy, because he was always, when things would get tough, he could lighten the mood a little bit. He's a humorous dude. So appreciate the time from Elliot Johnson. He came through. Big 2-strike hit. Joined us today after we couldn't link up twice last week, and I'm glad we were able to do it. Appreciate the time from Elliot. Get your tickets online, riverdogs.com. Still tickets available Friday night, the 5th annual Legends in the South softball game, and a portion of the proceeds will benefit MUSC's Children's Hospital. So it's a great cause, and it's a great night at Joe Riley Park, where they have a fan fest before the game, fireworks after the game, all sorts of former big leaguers playing in the game with former Braves, Yankees, and Rays. Friday night, this Friday at Joe Riley Park, get your tickets online. Appreciate the time from Elliot. We'll wrap up hour two when we come back. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.
You're listening to the Morrow Midday Show on ESPN Radio.
Wrapping up hour two here on the Morrow Midday Show with Luke Morrow on ESPN Radio. A couple of callbacks here on the Morrow Midday Show this afternoon. Elliot Johnson joining us last segment after we couldn't get him on last week. Appreciate the time from him. Appreciate it. Former big leaguer, former Charleston River Dog, who'll be here Friday for the 5th annual Legends of the South softball game at Joe Riley Park. But also last week we were talking about space, and we had some space songs earlier. And I was talking about Eric Burdon last week. And this was one of his greats while with War. Appreciate the time from Elliot last segment. Coming up, we don't have enough time to get into it now. I teased it earlier. So I'll get to it coming up later on. There's a tradition in baseball that we need to end. But it's not Braves relievers blowing games. That's another tradition that really needs to end in baseball. I mean, especially this past weekend. Look, I've made no secret about it. I'm a Red Sox fan. I could really use some losses for the Tampa Bay Rays. And I thought the Braves were going to help me out this past weekend. But they continue to just cough up games, and it is brutal. Atlanta's bullpen now has the second most losses in the league. You know the only team that's ahead of them? Arizona. Arizona has the worst record in baseball. They're the only bullpen that's worse than the Braves. You know who's tied with the Braves? Minnesota. The Twins are also 14 games under 500. You know who's next in line after those teams? Texas. Texas is 23 games under 500. I keep saying this. I've brought this up before in the show, making the same point. But it is remarkable that the Braves are even as close to 500 as they are with the amount of losses they've gotten from their bullpen. 22 of them now. And by the way, 15 blown saves out of 34. They've converted only half of their saves this year. The Cardinals closer has converted every save this year. Right? The top closers in the league or the top teams are 80% and above. The Braves are hardly over 50%. They're blowing half their saves as a bullpen. Ninth worst bullpen ERA in the league. Brutal. That tradition needs to end as well. Hour three coming up next. It's the Morrow Midday Show here on ESPN Radio.